Lao Tzu once said, "Nature doesn't hurry, yet everything is accomplished." A single seed planted eventually becomes a garden in time. When things get tough, tend to the garden in your mind. Jennifer Sodini.
Welcome to the Lost Traveler Podcast. I'm your ever-loving host, Henry Cameron Allen. And today, I have a wonderful new guest, a new friend that I'm meeting today for the first time, and you get to listen in. Her name is Kathy Hadizade, and she is a former tech executive with Fortune 500 companies and big stuff. And a few years ago, what, around 2018 or so, you sort of shifted gears and started focusing on mindfulness practices and creating a new sort of path for yourself. And so I'm, first of all, very glad that you're here. Mindfulness, I believe, is a universal life skill. Mm-hmm. And that's what this podcast is about. And so thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a fun and exciting time to meet other people who are vested in this kind of thinking and allowing other people to reflect on their own ideologies around these kind of modalities.
Where did this begin in your journey? Where did this come up in you, given your background, your biography, growing up? Where were these skills instilled in you, from whom, and how did it sort of unfold to where you are now?
Well, it's an interesting question. Basically, I come from Iran originally, so I come from a land of Sufi poets, Hafiz and Khayyam and Rumi, and that kind of thinking obviously existed in me. In 1995, I discovered Osho Rajneesh, and I went to India because I had a very big question in my mind, and that question was, what constitutes happiness?
The question of the ages.
Yeah, and I was very curious about it. I was 24, 25 at that time, and I was curious about it because I had discovered, obviously, money doesn't bring happiness. Lack of money can bring unhappiness, but money does not bring happiness. Yeah. And I also had discovered that education per se does not bring happiness. So I was very curious about this question, and I went to India and I studied Zen meditation over there, and I traveled all over that country, which was a fascinating trip at that time, to give me a different view of what people consider as happiness. Like what people of my land at that time, it was a very different time, would consider happiness would look differently from a little boy who is sitting on a piece of cardboard. And I was wondering how he is even alive because he was missing some limbs and is still having the biggest smile possible because of his belief system, because of the way that he was taught to look into the world. So there was a lot of food for thought in there for me. Did I find an answer per se? I'm not sure, but it made me think before coming to a capitalistic country like United States.
Yeah.
And I came to this country, and it was the 2000, and it was very, internet was booming, and the whole thing was new, the information technology. I want to cut the story short and say, flash forward to another 15 years after that, where I had immersed myself in this way of life, and I had gained tremendous amount of success, like amazing job, good position, house, kids, family, husband. I mean, these kind of things, they are amazing in their own you want to have them. And there was a lot of merit for it, but at the same time, I was not very happy. I was actually very overwhelmed and very confused. After I had become a mom with a big job, I was kind of like not finding, do I have time for going out and hanging out with the coworkers? Do I have time for the kids that are waiting to be fed? Do I have time for myself? Do I have time for a husband? Do I have time, I mean, for my friends? So I was in this mess, to be honest with you. And I didn't know what to do with this mess. One time, the only thing that came to me was, this is too much. And in a whim of a second, I bought tickets to go to Caribbean. And you know, like 1 week of staying in Caribbean doesn't change anything. We know that.
Right.
Right? I mean, seriously, except
doesn't
when
hurt.
I balance my credit card. I mean, but it was a very enjoyable vacation and I could get a break from things, but I could not come to a conclusion of how to solve this equation that is bigger than me. And these are all predecessors to the fact that I was in search. I was in search of, okay, I made all of these things that everybody dreams of. I was thinking that's the milestone of success. And yet I am more confused than ever.
And you are in the land of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's really, I mean, those are the cornerstones of what America is supposed to represent.
Absolutely. And yes, America is an amazing country in terms of giving you opportunity. Look, I came here, I was a PhD student. I came here from a different country and I went to the uni. I mean, I had an admission, but I went and blended in with the life in a way that I got a couple job offers within a year. So yes, it is absolutely land of opportunities, but do opportunities lead to happiness? That's the question.
Right.
Does grasping those opportunities always lead us to happiness? And there was a lot to think about at that time. But this maze didn't lead me to get out of that, because I was going on this fast train and I didn't know how to jump out of the train without dying or crashing or something like that.
Very common.
And it happened that the train crashed. And so I had to find another way of being with life.
Wow.
That was the origin of my search and my looking into mindfulness.
Shadow and Light LLC was established by Dave Roberts and Reverend Patty Farino, co-authors of When the Psychology Professor Met the Minister. Their mission is to empower individuals to transcend life's challenges by integrating spiritual practices with psychology to achieve peace. They are available for individualized spiritual counseling, virtual or in-person book club meetings, or presentations and workshops to universities, organizations, and other interested groups. For further information, visit psychologyprofessorandminister.com.
Did your parents, I know that Iraq, you know, in the 60s and 70s and 80s, it was probably a different world from where it is now. Mm-hmm. And it's still obviously in a state of struggle and change, great changes. How did you experience first going from your land to India, and then from India to America? It must have been like turning the pages of an encyclopedic volume in a language that you were completely unfamiliar with. I mean, it must have been a fantastic journey. It's like going through different quantum dimensions in reality, in a way.
Since you touched on it, I revealed another thing to you, that between that India and America, I think I visited another five countries within 3 months. And the reason was that, which is a sad reason, but United States and Iran do not have diplomatic relationships.
That's right.
And as a result, there is no U.S. embassy in Iran since 1978.
I was going to say it was probably the 70s, yeah.
Since the Iran Revolution. So in order to get a U.S. visa, you travel to the neighboring countries. So you have to travel to another country to just go and have a conversation with an officer. So in my case, I came back from India, and it was February when I came back from India, and I think I got my admissions in March or April. And so my trips began. First, to answer your question, between Iran to India, at that time, the level of poverty was different. At that time, India was very poor. They had, you know, they have a large population. And when I arrived at Bombay, it was the difference between the levels of the economic, socioeconomic levels of the people was very, very vast and very noticeable. Like that was that Bombay Palace, which was a very boom boom hotel at that time in that city.
Right.
And there were really a good number of people who were just sleeping on the floor in front of that same hotel. So there was this big vast difference. In Iran, we have the same thing. I think maybe in most of the so-called developing or third world countries, you have that. But that was more noticeable at that time. And the other thing that was noticeable for me was the level of hygiene was very different. Iran people are very into cleanliness and making sure things are clean, or at least that time was like that. And India was not like that. So during the whole time that I was there, I pretty much survived on a lot of bananas.
Well, you have to listen. I grew up all over the world. My father was a cultural diplomat for an agency of the government that no longer exists. It's called the USIA, the U.S. Information Agency, which became defunct because the mission was to Americanize the world. It was to bring all the appropriated culture, wrap it up in a red, white, and blue ribbon, and sell it back to the world as American at every level. And this is before there was a McDonald's outside of the United States. There was a time. But this was the world I grew up in. And the lens that I looked at my own homeland, you know, I was born in America, but I left very young and I didn't grow up there. My foundation was elsewhere. It was in Europe. Yeah. It was in Eastern Europe and South America. And, you know, I went back to the States in high school, and I always felt like a fish out of water. I never felt quite at home. I never quite understood, because my experience of America was bright and shiny, and everything that America was trying to sell to the world as better, you know, we took what you gave us and we made it our own and made it better than you did it, you know, so now buy it from us. But, you know, talk about it. Capitalistic. Yes. We make it in China, in Taiwan. Yeah. So it was very, very interesting. And I can relate to a lot of what you're talking about in terms of being from one place and not quite seeing a clear path in to the place you want to go. And also the dichotomy within the socioeconomic structure between the wealth and the extreme poverty. I saw it in Brazil. And, well, I saw it in every country. And you know, I have a hard time still rectifying looking at countries like Iran and India as developing countries. Mm-hmm. These are the foundations of civilization itself. And Africa, you know, we look at African countries and we say the same thing. These are the roots of humanity. These are the foundations upon which we stand. How can we look and say these are developing countries, and we look at America and Europe as being the developed countries? I still have a really hard time rectifying and understanding that.
I love what you're bringing here, because there is an interesting observation. You are right. These were the foundations of the civilization. Iran, Iraq, all of those countries, they were at that time. But the geopolitical direction of things have made a very big impact on these countries. And the word development really, really, really has changed its direction into just even survival in some of these countries. Like Iran right now, the poverty rate is unbelievable. I mean, having meat is a dream. Like eating meat is a dream for some people. And it pains me as I say this, but that is a reality of the situation. Whereas like a country like India, years later, I had teams of people that I was working with them in one of my corporate jobs, and it has come a long way. I did not travel there, but these are people working with me. I see their work etiquette. I am observing how much things have changed in terms of communication. They have a stable internet that a company like DirecTV can rely on their responsiveness. So there is a good infrastructure. There is really a lot of room for thought how some of these countries, because of the geopolitical climate, can stay in where they are for years and even go backwards. And some of these countries are moving ahead in their own way. Because you brought the point, developed countries, what is that developed? Maybe it is just access to a bigger infrastructure, better infrastructure. And there is merit in that. I'm not going to discount that, because I had to go to emergency room 2 times this week for my child having an infection. And I'm grateful for that. But is that the meaning of development? What price is there for that development? I don't know the answers to all of these things. But since we are having this philosophical discussion, I think there is something that everybody can sit and think about it and have their own answers.
Yeah. Well, and that's the point. That's the whole point of my podcast, is that there are universal life skills that every human being, 8.4 billion people on the planet today, will learn throughout their lifetime and apply every single day. And it doesn't matter what socioeconomic status you come from. It doesn't matter what culture you were born into, or the color of your skin, or the religion that you follow. It really is the universal platform of skills that we all will learn. So it's not the question of whether we learn these things, like financial literacy, emotional literacy, trade, hygiene, grieving, all of these qualities and skills that we will learn. It's a question of, in what measure do we learn them? And and I think the pursuit of happiness and mindfulness is a universal state, whether you are from Iran, whether you are from India, whether you're from Uganda, whether you're from Brazil or the United States, which, you know, I look at, and I have done for most of my life, I look at it from outside the bubble. And when you're in it, it's really hard to see what's real and what's going on. When you're outside of it and you look at the vast amount of homelessness and marginalization that exists today in the United States, when you look at the immigration challenges of the United States, when you look at the infrastructure itself, when I was still living there, I'm in Spain now. I was living in Minneapolis, and one of the major bridges in Minneapolis collapsed, killed many people. I mean, if the bridges are falling down in America, what does this say about, you know, what's really the developing country? You know, there's such division when we talk about political divisions and we talk about divisions of faith and sexuality and all of these things. The common factor, the common ground we all stand upon is that we are all seeking happiness, isn't it?
Very true. We are all seeking happiness. And there is another point. Every single human being at their core wants to feel like they are growing, they are developing towards whatever it is.
Whatever that means to them.
Build a movement. Nobody wants to be static. It's just human nature. So this brings us back to the topic of mindfulness that we are discussing, because that feeling of, am I growing, is not just getting that promotion per se at work. You can get the promotion, but it doesn't mean that necessarily you're growing or having that feeling of satisfaction, because you might not have thought about it that way. You might not have seen it in that light. So it becomes a bigger question of happiness requires this feeling of evolving and growing and developing. And how much time do we have for that?
Are you tired of feeling run down? Do you wish there was a natural, non-invasive, drug-free way to improve your overall health and well-being? If so, then let me introduce you to the Super Patch Company. Super Patches are a range of small neurotech patches that can help with a variety of issues, including sleep, immunity, pain mitigation, athletic performance, focus, anxiety, and stress. They're safe for everyone to use, and they're backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Order your Super Patches today. Now available in the EU, UK, Turkey, Canada, and the US. If you're ready to take control of your health, you can find out more online at dianedinkmeyer.superpatch.com. Super Patches. There's a patch for that.
In 2003 or 2004, I was still new to this country. I wrote an article. It was for New California Media that won some awards, because that was, I stated just what I was feeling about this system, which is that you are running and running and running and running, and the moment that you stop is like Cinderella's story. Everything vanishes.
Yeah.
Everything. You don't even have that structure of that carriage anymore. Not only the golden carriage, but you don't even have the normal carriage. The moment
any
that
carriage.
You stop.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. At least Cinderella had, I don't know, those mice or those kind of things.
You don't even have a pumpkin. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you don't even have the pumpkin. Thank you. I have forgotten the story, obviously. But yeah, that's a food for thought. How much do I want to be involved in this run? How much is enough?
So where are the foundations of mindfulness in your perspective and in your philosophy?
So the most basic thing that I look at, it, first of all, I'm going to say the definition of mindfulness the way I have been trained. I mean, people can look at the different definitions, but the way that I have been trained is mindfulness is paying attention to the present moment with curiosity and kindness. Curiosity and kindness are key, and being, of course, present to this moment. So what does that require? And that is foundational. Taking a pause. Ability to take a pause.
Yeah.
Because in doing and running on that treadmill that we just discussed, how do you find time, space, capacity, opportunity, or even a warning to stop, to be with the moment? It just doesn't happen if you're not intentional about it. So pause, to me, is fundamental. Ability to pause.
I talk about this a lot with my clients, and here on the podcast, The moment is critical. Recognizing the moment that you're in is critical. I'll say it, my listeners are probably tired of hearing me say it, but it's a new conversation every time, and it has a new context every time with every new person that I'm meeting. That time and space, the way I experience them, are not on a horizontal continuum the way that we've been taught.
No, they are not.
It's a pinpoint. It's a pinpoint of reality, this moment, this very moment. And your entire biography, the biographies of your family, your parents, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, all the way back, mine as well.
I'm sorry, Henry, this is my child's school. I need to take this because there might be
something. We will pause. Yeah.
Thank you.
So your entire biography, and that of your parents, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, all of your ancestors, mine as well, all the way back to our common ancestor. All that struggle, all that searching, all that pain, all that love, has led to this moment and prepared us for this moment and this conversation. If we were meant to be in a different moment, having a different conversation with someone else, we would be. And that's a very fundamental truth. Right? So everything that exists in the past only exists in our imagination, right? You could have shared a moment in the past with your kids, with your parents, with your partner, whoever, and their memory of that moment is going to be very different than yours. Right? The way that they imagine that time went. And it's no different for the future. It only lives in our imagination. And so whatever you can conceive in this moment as better, next, you must fully picture that. You must pause, as you say, and imagine fully. You know that saying, be careful what you wish for, you might just get it, right? You have to be specific. You have to be specific in the vision that you are crafting for the moment that you perceive could be better than the one that you are in. But really what's real, the only thing that's real is this moment and this conversation. The past is gone. You can't go back and fix or change anything. The future doesn't exist yet, except what you manifest it to be. Right? That, to me, I agree with you, is the value in the pause. It's the value in the recognition of the power of a moment that can turn worlds.
Right. So you are bringing a lot of different aspects to it. One of them is possibility.
Yeah.
And that is, that pause allows us to see possibility versus a stuckness. I mean, in my story, I told you earlier how I was feeling stuck. I wasn't able to see possibility.
Right.
And this, look, this is this person with this good education, with this good job and everything, and is feeling stuck. It has nothing to do with the merits I have. It had to do with how I was seeing my situation, how I was seeing it. Right. And nobody else, because to everybody else, I was like doing fantastic.
Yeah.
In my own heart, I was like, what is going on? Did I sign up to have a life that I woke up at 6 a.m., I have to drop the kid at daycare or whatever and feel bad about it and go to work? And well, I enjoyed my work, I have to say that, but at the same time, it was a lot of hours till 6 o'clock, and then come home and scramble to see what are we going to eat and be with the kid, but not be very present because I'm thinking about my meetings during the day. And then I have a meeting with my team at 9:30 p.m. And 2:30 a.m. when I'm coming out of the meeting, I come and see my two-year-old is sleeping in the middle of the stairs. And I'm thinking, because he was waiting for mommy to come. I mean, I was like, did I sign up for this? I mean, did I study all of these years and did all of these things for all of this? But it was my viewpoint. Right. That was it. Issue. And I was not trained and aware of, can I take a break? Because I was like, there is no break. You're just going with it. So to your point, there is this possibility, but of course there is another aspect, the generational trauma that we might be carrying.
Oh boy, that's a big point, big one.
Which shapes the way I see the world. Then there is another aspect that maybe I wasn't really paying attention to that very much, which is the continuation of life. And that is something that I see beautifully in Latin American culture. Like when I was recently, I was in Amazon jungle, and our guide, when we were entering the jungle at night, he wanted us to pray and connect with El Amor de las Almas.
Love of the jungle.
Yeah, which made me think about the magical realism that Gabriel Garcia Marquez talks about it in his 100 Years of Solitude, right, which people leave in the continuation of time. So there is really, really no death because they are all living inside each other, into each other's, into their present life.
That's right.
And I had for years not grasped it until I went to Amazon jungle of how he was able to think like that, because those people live their life like that, with that belief.
Well, and we all can. I think that's the point. You know, I'm very deeply immersed in the world of parental grieving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my son passed from brain cancer when he was 13.
Oh, wow.
And I was a single father. He was my only child. So talk about an existential crisis, and having to pivot in my perceptions, my belief structure about life and death, and certainly about happiness and joy. For 15 years, I have been repeating the mantra that my joy left with my son. Today, I can sit here and echo exactly what you are talking about, and saying that death is an illusion, that there is only one frequency. That frequency is love. Mm-hmm. And that we don't, you know, when we shed the physical, what's left? It's our consciousness. What is consciousness? No scientist on earth can tell you that.
No.
No scientist on earth can tell you if a dream, when you're in a dream state, when you're sleeping, is reality, or if this reality, as we call it, is the dream. Right? Maybe they're both. And so it's really opened me up to a completely different perspective. But without the information in your toolkit to expand your thoughts, to expand, to pause, as you say, to be able to pause and contemplate these incredibly complex ideas. I think that's a big part of it, is just the permission that you give now in your mindfulness work, that I give as a life skills educator. The permission is a powerful thing to pause and reflect and contemplate and really look at the big picture.
Sponsorship and listener support of the Lost Traveler podcast benefits the Lost Travelers Club, a volunteer-operated charitable foundation under United Charitable, a 501c3 public charity. Peregrine is the proper noun we now use to describe a parent who endures the loss of their beloved child, forever carrying their memory and embarking on a lifelong journey of grief, resilience, and hope. The Lost Travelers Club provides programs, resources, and empowerment opportunities for peregrines globally who are navigating their grief journey. Parents of child loss, getting there together. You can support this important work by becoming a sponsor of this podcast or visiting www.losttravelers.club for more information or to make a donation. Thanks for listening, and for your continued support.
I don't believe in death. And so I'm trying to change the language around grieving. When people talk about child loss, I didn't lose him. I know precisely where he is. You know, he's not like a set of keys or my favorite scarf. I didn't lose him. Cameron is here. He's with me. His hand is in every conversation, every plate that I'm spinning and all the different work that I do. His hand is in it. He's living in me and he's living through me. People get to meet Cameron through me.
Right. So
when I'm in nature, right, as you were talking about in the Amazon, I feel the same connection. I don't feel any difference between myself and the tree or the cloud or the mountain or my dog or my house. Mm-hmm. It's all frequency. Mm-hmm. It's all energy. And it's up to us to figure out where, like the great cosmic radio, where are we tuned in,
right?
So many of us are taught to have sort of a victim mentality of, well, that's how I was raised. So that's what I believe.
Yeah.
Or this was my, you know, my journey gave me these, you know, impressions or my faith, you know, dictates that this is how I must believe. And that can be so limiting, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, Henry, first of all, I want to give you a hug, actually a virtual hug for
thank
all that
you.
You've gone through as a parent to parent, to come to this realization that, and this continuation of life. And I'm sure you're helping other people
doing my best.
The same situation to look at it differently, which is such a big key. Awareness of giving yourself that permission.
Mm-hmm.
That permission that you're talking about, that we talk about mindfulness. Mindfulness is about giving yourself permission to take a break with and be with yourself. There is nobody else but you. People have to sit with their thoughts and their emotions, and that can be the most excruciating thing for people.
Oh, yeah.
But without sitting with those, it will not get processed and it will stay with them. Maybe this is interesting because grieving was part of my journey. I had a grandmother that I loved her dearly, and I called her Maman Tehrani. She was in Tehran, and that was the way I called her. And she was pure love. Like every single birthday, she would call me, my kid's birthday, she would send gifts, all of these things. And so I went to see her with my kids, and I get there and she gets hospitalized. And she never saw my kids. And I came back to this country not knowing about giving myself permission to pause. I went back to work and I was thinking, well, I should get over it. But there is no should anywhere.
And there's no getting over certain things either. You know, they say time is the great healer. Well, some things cannot be healed.
No.
And that's okay. That is okay. It's more a question of developing the skills for endurance and survival, as you said. You know.
Yeah.
Really about enduring, learning to endure and survive, girding yourself against all those forces that you're going to come up against. You know, for years, 15 years, I've said my joy left with Cameron. But you know what? I'm an inherently happy person. So what that revealed to me was that there's a difference between joy and happiness.
Yeah.
There's a difference between mourning and grieving.
Right.
There are sometimes these very, very fine, very thin membranes between states that are very similar and may even be connected, related. But that thin membrane requires breaking through at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that is the mindfulness journey. Is really pausing long enough. And you talked about kindness being key. Mm-hmm. That includes kindness toward yourself. because we get so self-critical and guilty about, you know, why wasn't I able to save my child, right? Why was I not able to introduce my children to my grandmother, right? She knows them now. You know, she sees them every day. She's watching over them, right? And so it's sometimes a very small shift in the perspective that can make all the difference.
But that shift in perspective sometimes requires people having a life event before they can have that.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, like when it comes to coaching, people think of coaching, how do you become a coach? They think of all these different schools and all of that. And I believe in the schools. I believe in education. I did that and I believe in that. But there is something bigger than a school about coaching and this kind of modalities and mindfulness. You have to have gone through a school of life.
Yes.
No amount of education can prepare you in that way. And people do not understand, you know, they're like, okay, why do coaches charge whatever it is that they are charging? Because how can you name a person's ability to be present with you and your pain and whatever you're going through, even if it is happiness, if it is whatever it is that it is, whatever it is that you're going through, how can you even set a price on that in a way that you can evolve to the next step? And that's the difference between therapy and coaching for whoever is listening to this.
Yes.
Because that's a very important thing for me to make those distinctions for people. People can be in therapy for years, and that is totally fine, because a therapist's job is to let you process it for as long as it is necessary. Whereas coaching, we look at the past to learn from it and move forward.
That's right.
And get out of that energy of stuckness that you and I have been talking about it. Because that energy of stuckness is what is destructive and what does not joy to evolve. I'm so glad you brought this difference between happiness and joy, because that's another thing that people are probably curious about. The happiness can be a momentary emotion, because happy is an emotion. It can be momentarily. You can be happy in this moment and 2 minutes later be extremely sad because of the course of events, which is fine. It's how the brain works. But you might have that fundamental level of calmness and joy in you, regardless of the emotions, like having this really solid infrastructure. Which is the foundation of a joyful living, you will experience frustration, overwhelm, all of those things. It doesn't mean that you will be dancing on the table every single minute of your life.
Right.
But you have the resources that when you are down, to pull yourself out into a state, maybe equanimity, maybe some other state, that right. You will feel comfortable because you have that base. That's joyful living.
Yeah, and it takes someone who has been down that road, who has experienced inherently the ups and downs and the pits and the valleys and the summits and, you know, all of these things in life. I think those are the best coaches and mentors that you can seek out. You want someone that with a varied experience. My background is in theater as an actor and a director. And I studied at the National Theatre Conservatory. And one of the things, very similarly, because we are, as coaches and mentors, we are holding the human condition. We have to, in its entirety, and we have to somehow detach from it in order to be able to really sit with someone in their own situation. And it's very similar to being an artist of the theater. At the conservatory, they would not accept someone into this master's program if they were coming right from high school to university into graduate school. They wanted people who had experienced life. They wanted, because if we're going to be holding and representing accurately, truthfully the human condition, representing it on the stage, we better have had some life experience under our belt.
Yeah.
Right. And so I always have a little misgiving when I look at someone's CV, their resume, and I see that they've gone from high school to university into a coaching program without really having had any of those variables in their own life path to represent the human condition.
Mm-hmm.
Reflect back, because isn't that really what it's about? Whether you are a therapist or a coach, you are reflecting back to the other person. We are. There's a reason that our eyes as human beings are set in a way that we cannot see our own faces. For thousands of years, mirrors did not exist. We had to look at one another's eyes to see ourselves, right? Reflected back. And I think that's a big part of the work that we do. And thank goodness that there are experts.
Yeah, that is a very true fact. I liked what you said. There's a reason we cannot see ourselves. That's why we do not see our own flaws or blind spots or whatever it is that is hindering us from experiencing a joyful life and moving forward. I like that.
Yeah, and all the more value in finding someone like yourself who is an expert, who has experienced highs and lows and feeling stuck and breaking through, right? To be able to reflect back to you, A, that there's hope, that it's possible. We can lay our toolkits out on the table right? And say, here are my tools. Here are the ones that I've created that have served me well. Take your pick. You cannot use them the way that I use them because you're not me. But what you can do, what you have permission and power to do, is to take these tools before you and synthesize them with the tools that already exist in your own toolkit, right? Mm-hmm. Remember, as I said, we're all learning the life skills, but how are we learning them and from whom? What does our kit look like?
Mm-hmm.
So if you find a tool that maybe will fit, and you can create a unique tool from a piece of yours and a piece of mine, then you're going to have a unique tool that you can then lay out in front of someone else and reflect back to them and say, here are my tools, and do the same thing, right? It's paying it forward in a way.
Very true about that. But there is another thing that I want to say that to people listening to this is that don't ever think that you are the only one with that problem. There are so many people with the same problem. You have no idea. Until I came to this work, I was thinking, as at that time that I was stuck, I was like, nobody will understand what I'm saying because nobody is in my life. Nobody knows what I'm going through.
How could they know?
How could they know? How could they? And then doing this work, I'm thinking, I can totally write an encyclopedia of different possible scenarios. And regardless of the person's background and where they were born and all of those kind of things, there are some certain traits. If you're introvert, the way you see yourself in the corporate world, what is going to stop you, the way that, like, all of those stoppers and blind spots, I can totally write an encyclopedia about it right now as we speak, Henry. So folks, don't ever think what you're going through is unique to you.
Right.
There are other people experiencing the exact same thing. So don't think that you're alone, you're the only person. That is a really important feeling. That's one of the things I want to say, Henry. For this part, I like groups. I like group coaching of homogeneous people so that they can see and feel and experience there are other people going through similar emotions, similar situations, similar challenges. And they can feel sometimes inclined to think that there is a different way of thinking. They did something else and they're getting a different result. Maybe I should do that too. So that toolkit is there, but when you see that somebody else is picking a tool and it's working for them, you become more curious about, maybe that tool can work for me too. So you get more encouraged.
Hey, are you like me, always looking for ways to make a positive impact in the world? Well, then join me in sponsoring Desire Child Care Organization. We are a legally incorporated, fully volunteer-based organization in Uganda, committed to providing essential needs, holistic arts-based education, and a safe family environment to 33 vulnerable children, ages 2 to 14. Your monthly sponsorship can help improve the lives of these kids toward a better future. Desire Child Care is different from any other charity I know because, well, we have zero administrative overhead. Every penny goes to the kids. And we have a plan toward self-sufficiency through agriculture. So support is temporary. It's kind of like a leg up. Visit desirechildcare.org to learn more and get involved. Let's empower and inspire the Desire Kids together. Thanks.
Permission. It's permission by action, you know, by setting an example, by showing people authentically how you have managed it, right? Mm-hmm. By just showing them by virtue of the life that you lead. The way we present ourselves to the world is the way the world perceives us. Right? So it's a mutual reflection there.
Yeah.
But the reflection has to begin with you. And so there are going to be nuances. That's the other side of the coin, right? You can say that there are two people who are going through the same thing, right? But each one is going to have their own particulars, right? Own unique qualities to that journey. It's like if you put two plants in a pot side by side, same kind of plant, right? And you put them next to the wall, they're not going to grow at a parallel plane, straight up the wall. They're going to go all wonky. They're going to go this way and that way and curl and cue and look for the light in their own way. Mm-hmm. And so if we can allow for that individuality, you're going to have a heartier plant. You're going to have a stronger plant.
Absolutely.
Right? And I think that unfortunately, a lot of the messaging that we get in our time through media and through even through education is that there is, and certainly religion, there's one way to do it. There's one way to believe. There's one tool that mm-hmm. works for everybody. But you know what? It's not the case, right? But that's the beauty of our humanity, I think. That's what I love. If we were all exactly the same, it would be quite a boring world.
Absolutely.
The shades and the nuances. No two births are exactly alike. Oh. No two deaths are exactly alike. There are common factors that yeah. we can identify. And that, I think, is for me, an important message in this whole conversation is look for the common ground between us. Absolutely. When the whole world is telling you to be divided, focus more on the common ground, because then you will find empathy. Then you will find that not only are people able to see that you are on a similar path, mm-hmm. they can be inspired by you, but you also see that you're not alone on the journey and you can be inspired by them and by us.
I really like you bringing up that common factors leading to empathy, because that is what a lot of our world is missing, especially an individualistic world, that everybody is walking in their own lane. You see, yesterday I had a conversation that was interesting. My mom was buying something from a yard sale, and the lady said, "Are you coming from a church?" And I said, "No, we do not go to the church." And then she said that, "Yeah, nowadays I see a lot of people going to the church." And I said, "Yeah, maybe I have not really done any study on that, so I really don't know. But I can see that people are seeking more community post-pandemic. And church provides it for provides that sense of community. I mean, religious and all of those things aside, and it brought me this mind that this to my mind that at least in the where I live in the U.S., you do not see the church's doors to be open unless they have some kind of a thing going on, if there is a ceremony or something going on. But in, for example, Latin America countries, I'm sure you're experiencing that, a lot of churches are open all day long.
Yeah, in Spain, I see that.
Yeah, so you go and you do whatever you need to do, and even the priest is doing whatever it is they are doing a lot of times during the day. So it is, whether it is the community that we are craving, that connection with the higher power, whatever we believe is we are craving, what is it that we are craving so that we can be kinder to each other as humans, so we can be there for each other as humans. I think the pandemic has brought a lot of those questions, at least in the society that I live in, because loneliness is a big factor.
Yeah.
It is a huge factor, and it's getting bigger and bigger with the advance of social media and things like that, that people are getting more far from each other. I can see how my kids are very comfortable using this device to connect with each other. But if I tell them, make a phone call, is as if I am telling them, we're going to go pull your tooth out.
Yeah.
Call doesn't exist in their vocabulary very much. But texting, Snapchat, Instagram, all of those things, they exist.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's a real challenge of our time. But I think it also comes down to the root of the word community.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If you look at the Latin base, commune, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In Portuguese, comum. In Spanish, mm-hmm. comun.
Yeah.
That means like-mindedness. And when we are, and that's very much the opposite of loneliness, isn't it?
Right.
Finding like-mindedness. And when we are, and it's not just the kids, it's every generation. I have, you know, parents and friends who are in their 70s and 80s who are attached to their mobile device, you know, and their iPads and their computers, because they are searching for community, not necessarily a group of people who all think alike, but they're looking for their own reflection. But they're looking at a fantasy. They're looking at a constructed, idealized world, or they're looking for a way to elevate themselves because they're not feeling elevated. This is why people love drama. This is why people love disasters, right? Oh, gosh, they have it worse than I do. Right? I can put myself above them, and I'm going to say, so I don't believe that there's any higher consciousness to achieve. There's one vibration. There's one frequency, and that's love, period. It already exists. There's no light and dark. That's all illusion, right? Mm-hmm. Shadow doesn't emanate anything. You can stand in the face of the sun and you can feel its radiant warmth on your skin, and you can give it gratitude for giving you life, right? Without the sun, there would be no life. Mm-hmm. We know this is a scientific fact. Mm-hmm. And just by our existing in the physical, in the face of that light, we create a shadow. The shadow doesn't emanate anything. It's not good or evil, right? It's symptomatic of our being in the physical. That's all it is. It doesn't have any power. And yet it is so different from that light that we are in a symbiosis. Mm-hmm. That we look over our shoulder and we're like, what's that dark thing behind me? It looks like it's attached to me. Is it part of me? Is that the dark side of my soul? Is it gonna suck me into this darkness? And I do think that people turn around because of our curiosity, which is so vitally essential to our humanity. We're so curious that sometimes we get caught up in that shadow that is nothing. And we forget the light that we are part of, that gives us the very life that we have and enjoy. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a little pivot, just a little pivot by a coach, by a mentor, by a friend to say, remember that beautiful, bright thing that's warm on your skin? It's still there. You're part of that. You wouldn't be here without it. Right? I think people work too hard.
Very true. Especially this is very true with high achieving people. Yes. Because, I mean, it reminds me of the Jungian work. The Jung works a lot on the shadow, and that shadow work, it is essential. But some people can be vested in that shadow work so much that, as you said, they forget the sun. The high achieving people, I see that more often. They might have, if we say a person has 100 qualities, they might have 95 amazing qualities. Whereas the moments that you ask them, they only focus on those 5 qualities that they are not very proud of. And they do not even bring to light those other 95.
Right. And do you know what that does? That reflects out into the world through your words and your deeds. And that shows other people, especially impressionable young ones whose eyes are upon you for how to be in the world. If they see you lost in shadow, forgetting about all that light that you are, and that is the reflection you're giving them of who they are. And that's where the confusion sets in. That's why we have depression, anxiety, especially in young people, but everywhere, plaguing humanity right now, is because we are forgetting the light that we are. You know that saying, was it Rumi? It might have been Rumi, who said that our cracks are where the light gets in.
Light gets through our cracks, yeah.
I have a different perspective on that. I believe that it is our cracks that allow the light within to get out.
To get out into the world.
It's a little bit of a different spin.
Yeah, it is different.
You know, but we also absorb the light, but we also radiate light. We are the light. We are it, the light. And it's our cracks. It's where we've been, you know, challenged and compromised and vulnerable in our lives, that cracks us open to be able to reflect, I'm just like you. I have felt the same. I have felt the grief. I have felt the fear. I have felt the courage. I have felt the hope, right? All of those things. This goes back to how we reflect back and forth to one another, isn't it?
Yes, and to your point, do not feel lonely. The entire universe is inside you.
That's right. And your entirety is in the universe as well. We're made of all the same things. It's all one thing. And to me, that's what God is. That's my interpretation of God. It's the oneness of all of it. And so if you go into a party, for instance, most of us are trained to see the individuals who are attending the party. Right, there's so and so in her green gown, and there's so and so in his bow tie, and there's so and so having their beer, and there's someone else having a glass of wine. We're noticing the divisions, we're noticing the separateness. Mm-hmm. When I walk into a party, I don't see any of that. I don't see any of the individuals, I don't see any of the genders, I don't see the different cocktails or the hairstyles. We are the party. There would be no party without all of us there.
All of us, yeah.
All of us. Even the people who are not physically there. Mm-hmm. It requires all of us to be the party. It's one thing. Mm-hmm. And if we can just get back to that pause, that simple but complex thought, that there's no difference, mm-hmm. that the difference is the illusion, then maybe we have hope. Maybe that's where hope lies for a better world.
Definitely. If we, you know, you see that a lot of problems in the universe arise from the fact that even people see God differently because of the religions and all of these things that people believe in it and they think it clashes. But if you believe that God, we are a mirror of God, then it's going to be the same God for all of us. I mean, you're
every
going
faith say that? Doesn't every faith say that humanity is a reflection of the divine? We're created in God's image, right?
But that's what they say. But then there are people are stuck on the differences between Judaism and Muslims and Christianity and all of those kind of different nuances. Whereas all these religions are supposed to teach us how to connect
Love.
With God.
How to love.
And how to love.
How to love one another. All religions are founded in love. And that's the frequency. That's the common ground, people. We have listeners in 44 countries now. And if that's one message that I hope to convey with the Lost Traveler podcast, because that's the irony, isn't it? We are all lost travelers. We can all relate to that feeling.
Absolutely.
The truth is, none of us is a lost traveler. When have you been lost on a journey? You're going to arrive at your destination eventually. None of us are really lost. That's the illusion. That's the irony.
Really no destination. I mean, Henrik, think about it. We're all on this journey. Who designed this destination anyway? I mean, let's just enjoy the journey while we are on it. Because
right.
Who knows how long we're going to be on this journey? Who knows? I mean, if anybody out of these people in the 44 countries can tell us, hey, I know I'm going to be there till whatever date, I would challenge them.
Greetings, greetings, greetings. I'm Queen Bee Divine. The cure is conversation. And where can you find me? At BluntReflections.com, where I will be talking to guests from around the world that not only share their time, but their insights and their tips on how they became the best version of who they were meant to be. So if you're looking for a great story and a great time, check me out at BluntReflections.com. The cure is conversation. And remember, blasé, blasé means to tell your story.
I'm sure you've heard in the news, there is this tech entrepreneur who has gained a lot of money and he's trying to make his body young. So he's reversing his aging.
Yes.
By he's reversing his aging. Good for him. Maybe he's enjoying his life that way through all of those exercises and whatever. That's his choice. But even with that, who can tell can he tell us till when he's going to be in this world?
He could walk out the house tomorrow, God forbid, and get hit by a bus.
Exactly.
I mean, nobody, I mean, I look at him and bless his heart, but he is me. He is that reflection back that we all look in the mirror and we say, oh, I'm not who I was. Oh, I'm transforming. Oh, I want to turn the clock back. If only I knew now, then what I know now, you know, all of these things, I would have eaten better. Or I would have exercised more. I would have, shoulda, coulda. No. You are precisely as you are meant to be. Otherwise, you would be otherwise. Start there.
Well, I have to say, they have to be grateful if they are able to even think that way. And if it's a physical situation, think about all the people dealing with dementia and Alzheimer and all of those things that are not even able to cognitively maybe think about those thoughts. I should have done that. I could have done that. They do not even have that connection with their cognition the way they used to have.
Right.
And how hard it is for them, how hard it is for their loved ones. I was in a meeting last night, Henry, and something came up that really was thought-provoking for me. And it was hard for me, but I don't know even how to digest it. One of the people who she's in her 60s and she has a mom who is 92. And she said that I have looked up options of how to end her life. And ending her life is very expensive. Because she is not who she used to be. So I'm thinking she's better off to be gone. What is the use of her aging till 92 when she doesn't feel like herself? She is having pain all the time. And I have to go and visit her 3 times a week. And I feel bad 3 times a week. And I was really, it was in this philosophical dilemma in my mind. Can somebody else decide about somebody's life in
People
that
do it every
way?
day. People do it every day. That's what wars are based on, is people deciding when it's time for others to leave. And, you know, that's a really, really hard question. It's a huge challenge in our time, but it's never not been a challenge of humanity since the beginning of humans, since the first human being picked up a stone and hit his brother in the head and killed him. There's always been this challenge, you know?
You are right, but there is a different dimension to it because we are having so much focus on longevity. I don't think humans were built to always stretch for their hundreds and hundreds. I don't know really what they were built for, but we didn't have all of these 90 being 90s and hundreds and 110s and all of those things being the aspiring factor. And now with this new look and new medicine, medical advances, we are in a different realm.
Yeah.
That we need to be able to navigate it. So that conversation with her really was very eye-opening for me to think about these new possibilities, but at the same time, new challenges that exist in our world.
I would love to do a part two of this conversation because that is a whole other episode. And we could go on and on, and I want to go on and on, but I want to be mindful of your time. I want to be mindful, you know, of the listeners as well. I want to ask you the questions. Actually, there are two questions for you because I had two guests on the last.
Oh, for the next one.
So yeah, so you get a bonus question. The first question is, what brings you to a place of peace?
Mm-hmm.
And the second question has nothing to do with that. How do you define critical thinking?
Oh, wow. They are two.
I know. They're two more episodes after that. But in this reductive versions, okay. What brings you to a place of peace, whatever that means for you?
I think at this moment where I am with my life now, if I can be able to see if something sits well with my heart and my mind conceives it to be the right thing to and do not fight it, that's what brings me peace. Really paying attention to the heart and not get sucked in into all the scenarios that my mind want to evaluate for me to protect me. So that's a big thing for me at this point.
I love that. It's like surrender.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What a beautiful, and not surrender as in giving anything up.
No, it's not giving
surrender
up.
Surrender as in giving that's in.
True. Yes.
Giving in, releasing all the expectations and just flow.
Yes, pushbacks or
yeah. No, I had a wonderful mentor when I was in theater school, actually, and one of the first things she taught us was that when you are stressed and tense and overthinking something, mm-hmm. it's as if you are in you've fallen into a raging river,
mm-hmm.
and your first instinct is to grab on to something. To save yourself, grab onto a boulder, grab onto a branch, you know, whatever you can find to struggle to get, you know, keep your head above water. But what happens is that when you do that, your risk of injury
mm-hmm. is higher,
much higher exponentially. When you lay back in the water will carry you around the boulders. Naturally, it'll go in its flow and it'll bring you to calmer waters. Trust.
Ooh, at the end.
Right? It's that it's I did a white water rafting trip when I with my mom when I was a kid. And that was the first thing they told you. If you get knocked out of the boat, relax into the water. It'll carry you around the boulders and your risk is much less. But we tense up.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that you said that, because it's really, that's a good metaphor, I think, for what you're talking about. In allowing the flow to bring you to a place of peace, trust it, trust yourself. So the other question, how do you define critical thinking?
Well, by definition, critical thinking is the analysis and evaluation of a subject until the time that you're able to form a judgment. But I want to turn it into mindfulness. In mindfulness, what you can consider critical thinking is a kind of thinking in which you question. You question and you become more curious about what you are thinking, what you are feeling, what you're assuming. And rather than just assuming and moving on, you start asking questions before you form a judgment or an opinion.
I love that. Absolutely. That childlike sense of wonder.
Exactly.
It's something that we have to offer. We have the power to preserve it.
Yeah, we do. We do. We lose it as we age in this life, because we kind of put those unseen chains on ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, what's your question for the next co-host?
Okay, I actually have a question for them.
Oh, good.
What is the biggest challenge and opportunity that you see for the humanity at this time? And don't tell me AI. That's not an answer. Just to be clear, generative AI is not the answer. Because generative AI is a tool. How we use a tool defines the usability and usefulness of it for the human. So that just one word is not going to cut it off, to be honest with you, Henry. Let them elaborate on what they
I am say. Going to qualify it with not AI. I actually had a guest three or four episodes ago, wonderful gentleman from India who was on the cutting edge of AI development. And I was asking him about the fears that people have around AI. Are they founded and you know, valid? And he said, some of them are. He said, it will make human intellect passé. Because what the process that AI takes in a moment, in an instant, something that the human mind can, it takes months or years to conceive, right? So the upswing, the good news, is that it opens us up to wonder. It opens us up to creativity, which I believe is the human condition, universe. Mm-hmm. All those things that we imbue what we call God with, the power of creation, the power of destruction, love, pure and simple, love and light, these are all qualities that we possess.
Yeah. Well, it gives us more time too to focus on our connections and relationships and whatever else we can do to be with other humans. So there is a lot of positivity. Personally, I see there is a lot of positivity, but we as humans need to understand that it serves us, not us serving it. Just understanding that and making that for ourselves is the key. Because it's going to be the second wave of smartphones, even stronger.
Yeah, I mean, that's really absolutely true, that these forces that tempt us, right, whether it's technology or sex, drugs, and rock and roll. These are things that are neither inherently good nor evil.
Exactly.
It's how we use them, not how they use us, and the choice is ours.
Yes.
I love that we're ending on this note, because that brings it all together into empowerment of humanity, mindfulness, curiosity, wonder, and empowerment. So thank you, and happiness.
Thank you.
I'm so happy that we had this time together. Let's do a part two. I feel like I've made a new friend. Talk about magic frequencies. Thank you, Kathy. We'll talk again very, very soon.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Henry.
You've been listening to season 4 of the Lost Traveler podcast with Henry Cameron Allen.
Visit me online at henryallen.org. Thank you to my guests, and thank you for tuning in. Let's keep striving for a better world together.